I have a bunch of questions, because I've been reading, well, I read this little thing.
Yeah, right.
A bunch of things over in the University of Florida Library.
Yeah.
About shrimping, and so I want to ask you several questions. First, about your family mm-hmm. and your history yourself,
right.
and then some general questions about net making and how to do it and
right.
all that.
Right.
And this afternoon, I'm going to come back and just take some pictures while
right.
you're all working.
Right. Okay.
But first of all, for the record, this is July the 11th, and I'm at Fernandina Beach. At the net shop, and I guess by the Standard Hardware store.
Right.
Got to always put that on the tape.
Yeah.
Okay. And for the tape, could you tell me your name and where and when you were born?
My name is Billy Burbank III. I was born in Fernandina Beach, Florida, in October 2nd, 1951.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me something about your grandfather, William Burbank.
Well, my grandfather was born on Cumberland Island, which mm-hmm. is in Georgia. And he started shrimping all back in his early years when he was 15, 16 years old, and got into the shrimp business and just started shrimping and started making his own nets. And when his net seemed to outproduce everybody else's nets, then everybody decided to get him to make their nets. And then that's where we got started in the net business about 1915. And been in it ever since.
Why did he come to Fernandina?
Well, Fernandina seemed to be a good little port for fishing and what have you, fish market. In fact, along with his net business and his fishing, he had a fish market too on the side. So
he's pretty busy.
Right.
Well, were his nets a different design? Is that why people?
Not really. They used basically just one type of design back in those days. You know, what they call the flat net. And
what is a flat net?
A flat net is just a type of shrimp net. It's just one of the many types that we have now. It was probably one of the first ones that anybody ever started shrimping with, just a basic design, a funnel-shaped net is all it was. And they just seemed to like the way his fished. And then as years progressed and he got more and more into net making itself, then he started having variations of one type net to the other. And then they went into what they call a four-seam balloon net, a two-seam balloon net, and from there on, you know, just many, many different patterns, styles.
Okay. Oh, well, we'll just have to cut that out somehow. Yeah. When he came to Fernandina then, how did he get linked up with the Standard Hardware store?
Well, he got linked up with the Standard Hardware store back in the early 1900s when Standard Hardware was looking for someone to make their nets for them. There was two net makers in town. There was Red Freeman, which they call, Red Freeman is what they called him, and my grandfather. So they were looking for somebody to manufacture their nets for them. They were sort of a subcontract. Well, they tried doing it with both of them, and my grandfather, a little bit more strong-headed, told them, oh, you either do it with me or just forget it. And him being a bigger producer, it could make him a little faster, you know, one over. And so the business started out underneath his house on the beach, South Fletcher, Fernandina Beach. And from there, we moved up to here where we're at now, 1957, where my grandfather and my father were more or less in it together. And since then, he's passed away. Now it's all my father's and me. Now I'm in with my father now. And as you can see, we've grown a little larger now. So.
Very much larger. Well, when he started then, he only made the flat net, and that was basically his net.
Right. That's all he did at the very start. But when he started making other people's nets, then that's when the variations came in, because everybody wanted something different. So from that period on, you know, we're into I don't know how many patterns now. You just couldn't name them all. But, you know, I make a total of maybe 120-something different patterns, you know, styles for people.
Wow.
So.
I didn't realize there were so many of them. How did your father learn then? How young was he when he started?
He started, I guess you could say, when he was a boy, but he was more into the fish market before he got into the net business. In other words, the net business back at this time really wasn't as booming as it is now. You just had a handful of shrimpers here. There was hardly any export business and all, just mostly hometown boys. And my father, he stayed busy peddling fish and shrimp on his bicycle from one place to another, you know, delivering for him. And his brother did the same thing, Frank Burbank, who was also in the net business in Freeport, Texas. So anyway, that's basically, you know, what they did then, right?
Right. And then how many brothers? I know you have a lot of brothers, right?
Right. I have three brothers.
And
right.
Are you all net makers?
All of us net makers, right.
Ah, well, how did the... you're the oldest.
Right. I'm the oldest. Then comes Tommy, then David and Johnny, ranging from 28 to 22.
And you all learned from your father?
Right, right.
So how young were you when you started that?
Well, let's see. I started myself, I guess, actual working when I was 11 years old. That's when I seen my mother doing it, and I said, well, heck, if she can do it, I can do it. So I jumped in there and, you know, finally started learning from then on. During football and baseball and everything else, I, you know, worked after school a little bit and during the summers. Then about 1970, 71, I started full-time. After 1 year of college, I started full-time down here and been here ever since.
So your mother makes nets too?
Yeah, well, she did when she was alive. She's passed away about 3 years ago. And, yeah, she helped us out, too. So we had a whole family down here at one time.
Did you have any sisters?
No, no sisters. Right.
So, really, net making can be done by men or women. It doesn't matter.
Right, right. Same thing with shrimping. We have several women captains who run their own shrimp boats. So that shows you how wide the field can be. It's not just limited to a man. You know, if a woman's strong enough, then she can do it.
Well, I was wondering, because a lot of fishermen, you know, have a lot of superstitions about women on board ship.
Well, that's just the old-time shrimpers. That's the way they feel, you know. But there's some women who really can produce the shrimp. There's some women who are fairly good at net making, but the biggest thing I can see about the net making is the woman has a tendency not to be able to stand up as long as a man. In other words, she needs to rest a little bit more, rest her back and her legs. And this is really the only drawback I can see in the net business.
You have to stand up all day long?
All day long, right.
That is hard.
Well, especially when you're putting about 75 hours a week.
Yeah. So the net business right now, I take it, is really, it seems like it's really good. You have how many net?
I have about 16 employees right now.
Full time?
Full time, yeah.
And can you keep up with demand, or are you just about?
Well, with the new building we have now, we're keeping up, which is good. It gives us a little more time off. Before, we were having to work 6-7 days a week trying to keep up, and we stayed usually 2 to 3 weeks behind, which in the shrimp business, you have to be able to produce when the shrimp are here. In other words, they can't wait till next week to get their nets. They need them now because the shrimp's here now, see? And if they disappear, then they say, well, I don't need the net. So for our benefit, we need to get the work out as quickly as possible.
Do you do more repair or more new nets?
We do more new nets than repair, but it's probably going to be on the upswing as far as repair is concerned this year. There's so many boats out, and money's a little bit tighter, so they're going to be more tendency towards repairing the nets instead of making new ones.
Right. And do you export your nets besides, or it's not just for the local market?
No, no. We are widely exporting to South America, Africa, Panama Canal, La Paz, Mexico, and this area there. So, you know, it's not strictly just the United States. So you can say we range from North Carolina all the way down to Florida, up the Gulf Coast, through the Texas Panhandle area.
So really, it must be that you're probably one of the largest net makers in the country.
Yeah, I'd say we probably are the largest producer. Now, I don't know whether we're the largest building now, which is, I can pretty much say we're probably the largest building as far as it's concerned in the United States right now. But I'd still say we were probably the largest producer as far as number of nets. In other words, I don't think anybody else is producing the amount that we produce right now.
Is it hard to find people to make nets?
No, there's several net makers around that, you know, if you're in business for yourself, you have to have a great deal of capital to do the business that we're doing with. In other words, if we weren't with the Standard Hardware, who is, you know, a big company, which can carry the load of, you know, money on the books. In other words, shrimpers can't pay all the time, and the amount of webbing and supplies that we have to order turns into a great number of dollars. And smaller people just can't seem to carry that much overhead and stuff, you see. So that's one reason they probably don't do quite as much. Plus, I don't think there's no other net-making family around that has as many of its own relatives in the business that we do, and we really gung-ho at it, you know. I guess you could say our family's probably some of the fastest sewers there is. You know, we haven't found anybody outsew us yet, so that's something to
say. You gotta have a sewing contest sometimes.
Well, we've tried it, but you can't get nobody to come challenge us. They come look at us one time and say, no way.
yeah. I can imagine. Yeah. Let me see. So you don't have any sisters in the business, but all your brothers are in the business.
Right.
And what do you call your business now? What's your official name?
Well, we are now incorporated. We incorporated 2-3 weeks ago, and we are Burbank Trawl Makers Incorporated now.
And Standard Hardware is able to distribute your nets pretty much for you nationwide.
Right, right. In other words, they do all our distributing. In other words, we're more or less subcontracting through them. In other words, they're furnishing the material, we're furnishing the labor. So that's the way it works.
That's a good setup. And how many days is this shop open?
Well, like I say, it's open 7 days a week here in the past, but now we're trying to keep it down to, say, just a 5-day week. And it's open from about 4 in the morning to 6:30 or 7 at night. That's usually when I hear and when I leave.
When the 4 in the morning?
Yeah.
When it just dawned on me what you said. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It makes me tired just thinking about it. Do you ever have any emergencies come in, like a shrimper really needs...
Right, we have those every day. We have them every day. Everything's an emergency to the shrimper, you know. I needed them yesterday. So
everyday loss,
we have some, like you say, on occasions we'll have a routine set up for the day, and we try not to break that routine, trying to take care of everybody as they come. And you'll have a shrimper who has no spare net or something, and he gets out and tears up, and shrimper really producing, and he can't afford no waste of time. So he comes in and pleads with us, you know, please, please, can you fix my net? And so we'll maybe step him in, just try to help him out, which is good business because, you know, they can't make it without you, so we try to help them.
Right. Well, it seems. In the past, though, didn't shrimpers used to do their own nets?
Most of your old-time shrimpers knew something about sewing and patching and what have you. Some of the minor stuff can be done on the boats themselves, but there's a lot of stuff that it's just like you're working on your car. You know, you can check the water in the battery or the radiator and a little grease job, maybe minor, but when something's really wrong with something, it's not worth your time, you know, and money experimenting trying to do this when you can get somebody who knows what they're doing, you know, and charge you a fair labor to do the job and get it back right, see. But most of your old-timers knew how to sew and still know how to sew, where the young boys are relying more on us instead of learning how to sew. But they all need to know how to patch their own nets on the boat because they get out there with small holes that they need to take care of right then instead of just letting them go.
Yeah, because you wouldn't want to come all the way back with
fuel
the way it
no,
is.
No, no, just for minor
back.
Repair, right.
Well, what did you ever, when you were in school and when you were young, I knew you grew up around net making and shrimping, did you ever think about doing anything else, or was that always your...
No, when I was coming up, you know, I was more sports minded. In other words, I had several scholarship offers in football and baseball, and that's where I was leaning towards, you know, at first. Then I decided against the football because I felt like that if I got into the football game that I wouldn't be back here to help my father, you know what I mean? And so I went on to a year at Gulf Coast, Panama City, to take up a little marine biology and stuff just to learn different types of things about the marine life itself, and played a year of baseball over there. And business started picking up a little bit, and my father really needed the help, so I decided I'd better come back and try to learn something. So here I am.
Well, you've done real well. Your business is booming.
I'm very well pleased where I'm at.
Yeah, really. There aren't very many people at your age who have their own business.
Yeah, that's
know,
true.
And it's
that's true.
It's booming.
Well, it's too. It would have been a dying art if somebody, you know, that's the trouble with all these other net makers. They have no one to teach it to, and they're steadily dying out, all of the older people. So just in one case up here in North Georgia, one of our, I guess you could say, competitors, of course, he was kind of a counterpart with the Standard Hardware 2, which handled a little bit of network for us up that line, passed away. And since his passing away, we've gotten a lot of business back from that area that we really used to get. So you can see it's going to be benefiting us more and more as these people die off. But it's a shame that, you know, they don't have anyone to teach their art to, because it's a dying trade, really.
And it can't be done by a machine, really.
No, there's no way a machine can manipulate the stitches the way, you know, our hand sewers can, because there's so many little things, flaws in the webbing, for example, that have to stop to be patched or repaired as you're making a net, that a machine would just go right on through it. Just, and another thing too, it takes a machine 8 hours to make one bale of webbing that I use, and I can cut up probably 3 to 4 bales in one day. So it goes to show you how slow a machine is compared to one person. You know?
If you know what you're doing.
Right, that's
you
true.
Know, it's kind of like the old John Henry thing.
Yeah, that's right. You got to know what you're
well,
doing.
Well, that's important to us in the folklore business, because that's something we see all over the state, where they're not only net making, but basket making. There's all kinds
right.
of crafts that are just... The young people
don't
want to learn it for some reason. I don't know whether they think it's not profitable, or they think it's too hard, or I don't know what it is.
Right.
But they don't, you know, maybe they don't have a good relationship with their parents, where it seems like you probably had a real good relationship in your family, which made you want to help your father.
Right, that's right.
And
it's
great, because net making, I've never seen really a family of net makers like yours.
Right, right.
I've seen just the old-timers.
The old-timers, hand-knitting cast nets and what have you, and that sort of thing, right. But I tell you, it has a lot to do with, well, just like someone wanting to be a farmer. He has to understand the dollar value of what he's going to get out of this compared to as him going to college and trying to learn some job that everybody can get. You know, you have 10,000 accountants. You know, you have so many of this, you have this, and you have that. But you don't have very many real true farmers and or net makers or shrimpers. This is a wide open field. You know, there's not only shrimp, there's fish, crabs, everything in this field that is really self-taught. I mean, the basics are there. All you have to do is do it. And if a person is strong-minded enough about wanting to make a dollar, then there's no limit to what he can do, you know.
Yeah, and you're your own boss. That's
that's the main thing,
for.
Right.
Is
right.
that for you?
No,
that's for you. Okay. I needed to get on tape. If you could explain to me, you know, I'm totally kind of a novice at it. Right from the beginning, the process of making a net from when you take it out of the bale, and then I'll be getting pictures of this later, but I need in words what exactly. So kind of imagine, like, if someone was watching you do it, how would you explain what you're doing?
Right, okay. Well, the first thing that I would do was that if I was starting with a new, fresh bale of webbing, unopened, is I would cut the side seams of this burlap that surrounds the bale. I would cut this open so I could get to the webbing. Then, depending on what type of net it was, I would start cutting several pieces off of this bale into sections, just like... If a seamstress was to make a shirt or something, she'd have a bolt of cloth. She would cut one certain size piece first for, say, the body part of the shirt, then another size for the sleeves to be sewn in. Well, that's basically the same thing I would do. I would start cutting off certain size pieces, so many meshes long. There's a bale consists of 3,000 meshes, which is each little square. That's a mesh, by so many meshes deep. And so I cut off, like I say, several pieces to start putting a net together.
How do you know how to
Well, this is all mathematically figured out. In other words, it's just like a math problem. You know, you have to have something to plug into it. Well, you go by inches and feet and what have you. In other words, a guy orders, say, a 50-foot flat net. Well, I have to figure out so many meshes to make 50 foot across a certain area. Then it has to be tapered so many meshes down to make a funnel. And each piece has to be tapered and cut a certain way to form this funnel to get down to the mesh size I'm looking for at the tail. In other words, the mouth is one size, the tail is another size. And each piece is tapered to get the certain size that I want around the tail end of the net. So it's all figured, like I say, mathematically. And each net is figured a different way. So In other words, you have different size meshes. You have 2-inch mesh, 1¾-inch, 1½-inch, 4-inch, 4½-inch, you know, different size mesh, and you have to take all this in consideration when you're building a net.
And then after you cut it up, what do you do with the pieces?
All right, after I get it cut up, I put the pieces in the proper places to start the net. In other words, like I set up what we call wings, which would be like sleeves on a shirt. All right, in between that, I would lay the body, which we start at certain points to start sewing those to the wings. We sew the top together first to the wing. Then the wings flip up kind of like sides, and we sew the bottom on, which we're building the net actually upside down to start with, because it's a little easier to do that way. And after we get the top, the bottom, and the wings sewed together, then we add tapered pieces, which are called corners, which give the net its shape. These go in between the bodies and the wings in what you call like a corner piece, and which is called a corner. And you have four of those in each net. And after these pieces are added, the net begins to take shape. After the net is all sewn together at this station, then it's brought out to what we call a hanging station. And this is where it's hung on combination cable, which is a process by which it's towed through the water. In other words, the cable itself is attached to what we call the wooden apparatus, the doors, the otter doors, right. This is what spreads the net open on the bottom of the ocean. It takes it to the bottom and spreads it. Water pressure, acting like a kite, spreads the net open.
How big are the doors?
Well, the doors range, you know, depending on what size net you want to pull. In other words, it takes a certain amount of door for each size net. So they start from 2 foot right on up, you know, probably 16, 20 feet being the biggest anybody's probably made. But anyway, back to the cable. After our nets are hung on this cable, then chain for weight to weight the bottom down on the bottom is added to the bottom line, and corks are added to the top line for flotation, right? So you get an open effect in the water. You're catching the bottom, plus you're catching anything that's up in the water.
The cable goes around the door.
It goes
open
from
part?
One end to the other on the top and the bottom. In other words, you hang it. You hang one stretch all the way across the top and one stretch all the way across the bottom. And in each end of this, you have four leg lines. You have two on this end and two on the other end. You have a top and a bottom and top and a bottom. And in each end, you put a galvanized thimble, which is an eye-shaped thing. In other words, this is where the net is shackled to the doors. You run a shackle through this eye, which shackles it to the doors. So they can unshackle the net if they have to bring it for a pair, or shackle it up when they get ready to drag it. After this process, then we add what we call the cod in, or the bag. This is where all the catch goes. This is the heavy, colorful webbing that you see on the tail end of the nets hanging up in the boats.
Kind of looks like confetti.
Yeah, well, the confetti part is another part of the bag. This is what they call the chafing gear. It's a skirt that actually goes around the bag to keep it from chafing out on the bottom. Because when you load these bags up with fish, crabs, and what have you, the bag actually rubs on the bottom. And these coquina bottoms that we have around here would chafe the bag out, you know, within 2 or 3 hours. So you have to use this for that. Plus, it also acts as a kind of a shark protectant. It keeps the shark from visualizing all the catch in the bag and coming down just taking a mouthful each time, you know, but it doesn't always work that good.
Well, the bag itself then is made out of a different kind.
It's made out of a heavier thread. In other words, we have nylon, the same thing that the webbing that we put in the main body of the nets is all nylon. The bagging is nylon too, except we do have some what they call polyethylene or polypropylene bagging. It's more of a plastic type bagging, which is a lot lighter and a lot easier to clean out, and that's why a lot of them like that.
Right. And before you used all the polyethylene and all, would it just be made out of what?
It was made out of cotton and duracot. That was the old-time webbing, which most of the fishermen claim was still the best fishing webbing they made, but it had a tendency to wear out a lot quicker.
Yeah.
It would be a lot better for us, I guess you could say, nowadays, because nets wouldn't last quite so long, but That's one of the major problems with nets nowadays is the nylon makes them last longer than they should, which after a while a net's been fished so long, it gets kind of raggedy and they're not producing like they should, and these guys are still dragging them. And really, if they had new nets all the time, they'd be doing a lot better.
Right. way, because the holes right. be stretching
yeah,
out.
That's right. In other words, it just gets all out of shape.
Yeah. Okay, so after you put it on your line, and...
hang it and put the bag on. You've got a completed net when we finish the hanging procedure, putting the chain and the floats on and the bag.
Okay.
This is a completed procedure. Then it goes outside to our treatment plant, which
you
is seen
that
out
right
there.
Here?
Right, right. You've seen it right outside there. It's dipped in a polyvinyl paint. We have two different colors, a blue and a green. Also, we have the old style tar, just regular old hot tar that penetrates the nylon better than the paint would, but it's a lot messier on the boat, and you also get burnt up from the fumes and the sun. Now, some of the old-time shrimpers swear by it, but all the new-time people say forget it. They want the paint. It's a lot cleaner. Doesn't get on your boat. Doesn't get on your hands.
Yeah, well, I can see that.
Yeah.
About your patterns, I know you've designed some patterns yourself.
Yeah, right. Right.
Well, what are the advantage? What are your patterns that you've designed?
Well, the patterns, I've changed and modified a lot of nets that we have. Of course, you know, you're going to do this over the past when you find better and better ways and which seems to be working the best. Of course, certain shrimpers like little certain things their own way, so they can just say that, well, he don't have what I've got. I've got my own type net, you know, which makes them have a little more confidence in their rig because they think they've got what they want, see. And, you know, you can make several modifications to nets, but the two that I'm working with right now, which one, I guess, was the biggest seller, was the Mongoose.
That's one I sold.
Yeah, right, Mongoose in that book. And it's, you know, surpassing everything. In other words, it's increased our business, you know, I don't know how much, but a great amount this year.
What's different about it?
Well, several years ago, we came into an era where we weren't just pulling one net on each side, two nets per boat. We started pulling four nets, two small nets on each side, which seemed to produce better than one single net on each side of the boat. So now this took more gear, more power, more fuel to pull all these four little nets, which caused a lot of shrimpers trouble because it was more trouble to get four nets on the boat than two. Well, I decided to come up with something that would revert back to one net, but was doing the job of the two nets. In other words, the Mongoose is actually two nets in one. You don't have to pull what they call the dummy sled or the bullet with this net, but you're still getting the same amount of spread or mouth opening that you'd be getting with the smaller nets, or actually more because you don't have a breaking point in the middle between two nets. This is all one net, one solid mouth. And also, I can get a lot more height out of this net, which is detrimental to the white shrimp. In other words, you have to have this height to catch the white shrimp, and there's really no other net right now that will outproduce this net.
So your mouth is much bigger than
the smaller two nets that we had. See, the mouth opening couldn't get as high or as wide than the Mongoose is getting right now.
Wow.
So
that's a pretty good seller right
yeah
now.
right that will probably be the white shrimp net from now on, unless we can come up with something even better than that. But it's we can add to this if we have to, as far as more height, but you don't want to overdo anything, see? The other net that I have out is the Condor, which is kind of slow taking on because we're still modifying it so many ways. What we're trying to get is a net that's more streamlined than the Mongoose, but actually fishes like the Mongoose. In other words, we want something for the shrimp that are strictly on the bottom without catching so much junk up in the water. We want something more low profile, and that way a shrimper can basically have two tight nets and that's it, which might simplify everything for everybody. But I'm finding out more and more in the shrimp business that it's just like the shoe business. No matter what you do, everybody's got to have something different. And you can't please everybody with one net, and that's a fact. So.
And I imagine some shrimpers have been shrimping the same way for years and they don't want to
change. They are more and more adding what they call tongues to the nets that they have now, trying to get as close as they can to the Mongoose. In fact, since the Mongoose has came out, everything that has a tongue on it is called a Mongoose, which is kind of wrong. I mean, it's altogether different, but you know how people are. They want to think that they have the Mongoose, which they don't.
Well, at least you know you're popular.
Yeah, that's right.
And did your father design that?
My father took over from my grandfather and has made several modifications to the flat nets that he used to make. And also, he's done probably more modifications and probably has got the best producing four-seam balloon net ever produced. In other words, that was our biggest seller before the Mongoose, was the Burbank four-seam, which my father can take credit for our particular design, which seems to do better than most anybody else's. And also our particular type of two-seam balloon net, that, which we make, which my father and his grandfather, I mean his father, started with, is also a good producer. But now I came up with a modification on the diamond, on the flat net, which I call the diamond wing flat, which is adding more webbing to the wings and cutting a taper on the wings, which right now is the hottest flat net on the market. It's a producer. In fact, it was the hottest thing before the Mongoose. So now we've got several hot items, but the Mongoose seems to be the producer.
How much would a Mongoose net sell for?
Well, it's there's so many variations that you can put on one net, but I can try to hit it with just a basic figure. And this all depends on what you can get your webbing for and what have you. But they're basically running somewhere around $14-$15 a foot. So, you know, you can take it from there or what a price would be. But that's just a basic price. And there's always some variations about the amount of chain or the type of bag that a person wants and the type of treatment. All makes a difference in the price of it.
Should a shrimper change net every year? Or?
Well, a shrimper really and truly, if he was using his head good enough on his network, would put so many dragon hours on his nets and then bring them to the shop, they would last him, you know, a lot longer. But now this always don't always work like that, because there's times that he can go out there and in 5 minutes hit a rock pile and he's done tore everything up, you know, brand new nets. So he has no insurance on these at all, so it's a gamble. But really and truly, if they would take the time to log how many hours they have on these nets, because a net can only take so much dragging, and it's chafing the whole time it's dragging. And if they wouldn't overdo it, get them in so bad a shape that when they come back in, they have to have major repair instead of just minor tune-up. You know, it would be beneficial to them if they do this, but it's hard to get them to do it, because once they're catching, they don't want to take them off.
They want to come back in. Right. I know. And the season is right now, isn't it? Or when is the season?
This season, really, shrimp season is only about 6 months out of the year, really the actual hard-producing shrimp season. But you have, you know, what they call bar fishing, or just, you know, going out every day trying to see what they can catch, you know, trying to get by. But the season really starts from about June to November is about all you got, maybe late December, you know. And in between there is just slim pickings, you know. You just can't depend on it. In other words, if a shrimper can't make it within those months of June to November, then he's got some hard times ahead of him, see. So now, most of the ones that have boats paid for, don't worry about it, because they've made enough to overcome all this, you know. But the guys with these big $2,500 a month payments scratch their heads.
Yeah, I hear that a lot of them are now going into also snapper fishing on the
right.
Ocean.
Yeah, there has to be some variations made right now. In other words, more people are turning their boats into combination boats, fishing, shrimping, crabbing, whatever they can do to make a living through the bad months, which I think our country needs drastically. In other words, I think our government could somewhere or another run a survey on our seafood industry in the whole country and try to find ways for us to use everything that we catch, just like the Chinese and the Africans and everywhere there. They don't throw nothing back. I mean, they use it for fertilizer. They use the fish to feed the poor people. You know, they give out so many food stamps. Why can't they get some fish going? These families can eat fish. You know
what
I mean?
It's the best source of protein.
Right. And instead of giving out really the stamps themselves, you know, give out the food or what have you, you know. And, but this would put more people to work also if they could get these factories open. In other words, where a shrimper just puts so much catch into, say, a 25-pound plastic sack, puts it in the freezer, and brings it in and takes it to these plants to let them sort it. They just get so much per bag. His big fish, his shrimp, can be culled out. He can sell those like he normally would, but all the other stuff, let it be culled at a factory and use what's usable, see, which would create millions of jobs, you know.
Oh, yeah, because there's a lot that's caught in the
net. That's right. It's a waste. And
right.
This way, I believe it would eliminate a lot of the problems, and a shrimper could make it year-round like this, so no problem.
Well, as the shrimpers are going to start doing combination know, fishing and shrimping. Will you be making nets for fishing?
Right, we make fish nets already.
You do already?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So it's not really that big of a game around here because it's we're at a point on the coast where it's a long way to the fishing grounds. In other words, we kind of dip in the coast of Florida right here, you see. And in this particular area, it's just so far to go to the fishing grounds. In other words, the actual good fishing is north of us, up towards Charleston, Brunswick, and Savannah, and then south of us, New Smyrna, Cape, and, you know, down in that area. But it's becoming more and more of a thing now because people have to do it. And we've got several boats out here right now fishing with nets for grouper and snapper, and also longlining for our swordfish, which are doing real good on it right now.
Right. Which, for a while there, you couldn't eat swordfish there.
No, well, because of the mercury content,
yeah,
but this is all, it's just like anything else. They find something wrong with everything that's good for the shrimp.
anything that you eat, actually.
Well, that's true, right? That's true.
So, let's see. I want to ask you about what tools do you use? What are all the tools you use in your net making?
Well, the tools that we use are basically simple, just a small 6-inch cutting knife, which we use, which we import from Sweden, and just a little small wooden handle knife, about 6 inches long. And we use what they call needles or shuttles, which the thread is wound on, and this is what we do our sewing with. We have a girl that threads all these up at home for us and brings them in every day. And we use what we call needle nose pliers for doing some splicing work on the thimbles and the leg lines that I told you about earlier. And we use different types of cable cutters for cutting a combination cable, and bolt cutters for cutting chain. And that's basically all the tools we use right now.
The shuttles, what are they made out of?
They're made out of nylon and plastic. Right.
They
the old times, you make them out of wood.
Wood, yeah.
Right. Right. Bamboo and different things like this.
I've seen some of the older ones in museums, and I think everybody used to make their own.
Right, right.
Each net maker.
Yeah, that's
had
right.
Their own
right.
Shuttle. Right. Great. So how many nets per week do you make here in your shop?
Well, to give you an average of what we did this week, we built 24 new ones. We did a total of 7 odd jobs, which is little small nets and bags, just single bags, not on nets, and 40 repairs. So, you know, we're averaging somewhere around 50 to 60 nets per week, repairing new nets a week. So as long as we can keep that up, we'll come out ahead, and we'll get more time off too. At times we have as many as 250 nets back ordered. So we hope to overcome that this year. We don't want to be in that kind of shape because hunting season's coming up, and we all like time off to do a little hunting.
Would you have an off season too then?
Well, not really. We look for that. Usually January, February is our slow months, but like I say, the fish trawling and the other odd jobs is keeping us pretty well busy. But right now, the thing of it is, there's just so many boats out here that there's always something going on. Everybody's dragging in. It's just impossible to take care of everybody at one time, so it spreads itself out to where we're busy just about all the time. So you see, there's only, 52 weeks in a year, and we're handling in the thousands of boats, and you're talking about maybe 3 to 8 nets per boat. So, you know, if you add all that up, somewhere along in there, you're going to be doing work all the time. So.
For yourself, you're a real fast, you know, obviously you're probably the fastest net maker.
Right, that's what they say.
How long would it take you to make one net from beginning to end?
One net from beginning to end, I'd say on just take an average 70-foot flat net. Just to cut and sew the net, it would probably take me right at 1 hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours. And with 3 or 4 people sewing, we usually can build it with between 45 minutes to an hour. So it takes me about 45 minutes to an hour long by myself. But to complete the net, as far as hanging, doing the bag work, the whole deal besides the treatment, it would probably take me approximately, I'd say in the neighborhood of 3 to 3.5 hours by myself. If I was doing it by myself, I would still be making pretty good money. I could possibly do 3 a day, which I wouldn't worry about it.
Do you have any special, the tools you have, you don't have any special names for them, just they're called shuttles.
Shuttles, knit knives.
Right.
No,
right.
No special.
Sometimes people have them. And there's just one other thing. When you're repairing a net, how would you go about, like if a net has a big tear in it, how do you repair that?
It's just like putting a jigsaw puzzle back together. In other words, you start getting your pieces together, figuring out where, which goes where, first of all. In other words, if you have just a minor hole, just say a big hole in it, it's just more or less sewing a stitch up in a piece of cloth or something. But you have to have a starting point and an ending point, because this has to come out mash for mash. In other words, you're making squares, and everything has to come out square, not triangle or five-sided. Everything has to come out square. Far as a net that's, say, torn in half in about three different pieces, you have starting points which you go by. In other words, when the net's built, you have seams in it, and you can put seam to seam to start one piece back together. Then everything else starts falling in place. But now you have times where there's some webbing missing, just like somebody would throw four or five pieces of your puzzle away, and it was in a spot where you needed those pieces to really get it back together. Well, you have to add webbing to these places to start the net back together, and then it starts taking shape again. Then you.
Do you have to tie the knots yourself?
Yeah, right. It's the same procedure as sewing one up. It's all hand sewn, and it's more or less like making a handmade cast net. In other words, you have to make some meshes in this. It's not just sewing two pieces together. You have to make meshes in between two pieces, right?
What kind of a knot is that?
It's just a figure eight knot. That's all it is. We use most of the knots we use in the shop are figure eights, granny knot, square knot, and a rolling half hitch is what they call it.
And different knots are used. How do you know which knot to use?
Well, basically in the construction of a net is nothing but just the figure eights. In the hanging procedures, you're using more of the half hitch. You're using the rolling half hitch and the half hitch knots. Square knots and granny knots are used as far as tying chain and that sort of thing, just like you're tying shoelace or something, just standard knots for that particular job.
Okay. Now, you've answered all my questions as far as what I had down, but since I'm a folklorist, I wanted to ask you this question. Have you ever, first of all, what's the strangest request you've ever had for a net? I mean, has there ever been anybody who really wanted a weird net?
Yeah, President Nixon, for one. In other words,
he did?
Yeah, we built them three nets when he was in office for Key Biscayne to keep the sharks off of him and people floating bombs up on him. And in other words, they went off of his beach house out there at Key Biscayne, and they sunk several concrete pilings in an area so big that which tapered out from the beach. And they wanted some heavy netting to cover this area that covered from the bottom to the top, floated all the way across the top and chained all the way around the bottom, that the Navy divers could take out there and attach to these concrete pilings. And before he would go swimming, every morning the Navy would go out with skin divers, would go all the way around the net checking for bombs and to see if there was any sharks inside the net, or, you know, making sure everything was secure before he went in the water. And we did this for 3 years, and I think the third year we were starting to make it, they called up and said, hold it. And that's when he started getting into his little flings, and nobody wanted to pay for it anymore. So that ended that. But this net took about somewhere around a day and a half to really rig. It took, you know, seven or eight of us to rig it. And my mother would get down here and cook us up a big meal during the middle of the day, cornbread and fried chicken and corned beef and hash, anything, you know, and just keep us all busy and happy. And it was quite a job. It took about 15 people to lift this net once we got it made. It tapered. Started out kind of shallow, like your water would be, a foot deep at the bank, and tapered all the way out to about, I think it was 10 foot deep at the deepest point. And had some 250, 300 floats, 6x8 floats on the top, which kept it up all the time. And it was fascinating to know we were making something for the president.
I know. He should have written you a letter or something. Yeah, yeah. Thanks for keeping the sharks away.
We never heard anything from him, but we heard some of the Navy divers were actually cutting holes in trying to get sharks to come in and get him. But I believe that was just a joke.
I doubt it. What's the strangest catch you've ever heard anybody catching around?
Strangest catch?
Yeah.
The strangest catch.
President Nixon.
No. Yeah. Would probably be a submarine. An actual submarine in somebody's net started towing the boat backwards, almost sinking the boat. Didn't even realize they had the shrimp boat caught. It was not a Navy submarine. It was a Russian submarine. And they didn't even...
Here?
Well, it was off of this coast, yeah. They didn't even realize that they had the submarine in the net at first. They were towing one way, and all of a sudden they started going backwards, and the cable popped. And just a little while later, they saw the submarine surface with a shrimp net on top of him. So I guess I should say that was the weirdest catch.
That is the weirdest catch. Are there any superstitions about bad luck in the net shop?
No, we don't really go with superstitions. We just work.
Uh-huh.
We don't have time to think about superstitions.
I suppose there's a lot of superstitions about boats, you know, the old timers.
Yeah, the shrimpers themselves have gobs of superstitions. They don't want you to say gator or alligator on their boats. And this is just some superstition. I guess when somebody did it one time, they tore up everything on the boat talking about alligators. But just recently, too, now, you're talking about odd things that have been caught. Last year, a fella caught about a four-foot alligator about 3 miles off the beach in his trinet. And these were some good colored friends of ours, and they all like to lift the boat. The gator took the boat over. But they brought it back to the shop to us just to show us what our nets would catch. So that was kind of funny.
I believe it. Well, and around here, do they ever have any stories about the pirate that was here? Who is the pirate? There's a famous pirate on Fernandina. What's his name? Louis Ory,
I know who he's talking about, but I don't know much about the superstitions or nothing about him.
I'm gonna talk to some of the old timers, but I was just wondering if you'd heard any of those stories. And what about people around here? Do they talk about the Bermuda Triangle?
Well, you know, we talk about that down here all the time ourselves and all, but most of the shrimpers and what have we talk about is just seem to think that it's just a turbulent area. In other words, the current are so strong in this area and so wishy-washy that anybody in this area at the time of a storm is susceptible to sinking. Another thing is the bottom drops off so steeply in some of these spots, and the tide is so strong on the bottom that it carries things away before anybody can pinpoint them. And the ocean's so big, how are you going to find all these little things? I mean, you can search and search and search, but now... how they can't find metal airplanes and stuff like this with sonar and stuff like that, I don't know. You know, this.
Yeah, it is strange.
That's superstition. That's some things to think about now.
Well,
you know?
I mean, you know, who knows what they are, but the stories have been carried, and it's interesting. Is there any place around here that people get lost? I mean, have you ever lost a shrimp boat out here?
No, we've lost several, but it's mainly just negligence on the captain's part, as far as in and out of the jetties or other vessels, you know, and that sort of thing, but nothing mysterious like, you know, just